For January the 8th, 2016, we talk about Activision buying MLG, Undertale, and we ask you about your gaming New Year resolutions. Welcome to Level 133. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. That's right, David, you're back.
I have returned.
Thank you for joining us, David. That is it is very nice. You're away for a couple weeks, but now you are here. The new year is in full swing. And yes, I don't know that I have anything to banter about. No anecdotes.
I'm just gonna warn people, it might get a little sloppy tonight.
Okay, yeah, I know. You're
Shane coming on the show.
She's
bad timing.
She's pregnant.
Yeah, that's
oh wait, shit, am I allowed to say that on the show?
Yeah, no, totally.
Okay.
So yeah, that would have to be an interesting set of circumstances, but no, I'm enjoying some bourbon tonight, so see. We'll see where that goes.
I'm drinking a beer from Rheingeist that is called Pure Fury.
Nice. Pure? That's the beer that is my namesake beer, and I can't love it because it's an IPA.
It's not an IPA. It's called a hoppy pale ale, which it means it's less hoppy than their IPAs, which is everything else that Rheingeist does.
Oh, so I had my second IPA in life that I enjoyed recently. Mm. So the first was the Sculpin from I forget where, and then I've been drinking. And the second was from a local brewery called Dogberry, and I got a growler. Yeah, I know, right? I got a growler of beer from them for Christmas with no label.
Oh yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So like no label on it, so I had no idea what it was. I tried it, and I was like, oh, this is fantastic. And then someone was like, yeah, that's definitely an IPA.
Oh, so they Pepsi challenged you.
Yeah, they. Yeah, that's exactly what they did, and apparently IPAs are growing on me. So maybe I need to go back through and retaste IPAs on a broader scale.
You know what? Don't force yourself to do it. I'm somebody who likes IPAs, but I understand that there's a backlash against them, and more variety is better than, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, the only time I can do IPA is sometimes it kind of manifests as, I don't know, clear or crisp or kind of that sort of thing. You know, that's kind of the overall effect of the hoppiness as opposed to just bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like maybe the Dogberry struck me as kind of that way.
Hmm. Yeah.
But
that name, though. Yeah. We need to,
consult with them. Let's get some brand issues on this.
It's real Ingeborg Hunkerdink of beers.
Well, to be fair, Dogberries are actually a thing.
Right. Oh. But also, it brings to mind chunks of shit on a dog's asshole. So, like...
I'm glad someone's telling the hard truth.
Also, apparently, a character from Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing.
Huh. Yeah, I probably should have gone with that one first. But okay.
The level is fun and...
Oh, and the berries are named after him. Because the berries are considered lowly and inferior to other edible berries. So maybe not the best name.
Since we're doing some what you drinking, Ben, how about you?
Yeti Stout.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And yep. David, how about you?
I'm unfortunately on water. I have to work after this.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that.
Yeah, you know.
I didn't mean
Sorry,
to rub it
David.
In.
No.
But we have a show for you this week. Boy, do we.
It as is... opposed to every other week.
for everything you thought about the rest of the weeks, the rest of the shows, nothing. Forget it. No. We've got the usual. We got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. We're back up on the huge, which starts with...
The brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games, specifically the one around us. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
Which is, yeah, so this is, I guess, apropos because everyone's got Star Wars mania right now, including Zen Studios, who just announced that they are going to be releasing a couple of Zen Pinball Star Wars The Force Awakens tables. which anyone who's listened to the show for a while knows how much I love Zen Pinball, and specifically the Zen Pinball Star Wars tables. So this is two more to add to my collection that I'm very excited about. They've got one that allows you to play as the good guys called the Force Awakens table. Mm-hmm. And then the second allows you to play as the bad guys, which is called the Might of the First Order table.
Okay.
So, I was kind of hoping for the Force naps.
the Force skips a day.
Yeah. It drifts back to sleep.
Force calls it. Yeah, so you know, Zen just has a history of doing really, really solid pinball tables, and I will be picking these up on my Vita for sure. I actually skipped their last deployment, which was Star Wars Rebels, based on the animated show, just because I had no reference for the show, and you know, couldn't really justify it without knowing anything about it. But I will definitely. Oh, go ahead.
It's actually. Has at least some redeeming points.
The show or the table?
Oh, the show.
Yeah, hopefully the table too. I've heard good things about it, and you know, I have barely gotten myself started on the Clone Wars. I think I've watched maybe six episodes. So I am so far as behind to be, you know, way back at the beginning again. Mm-hmm. Sure. But I have the Clone Wars table, so go figure. Yeah, that was part of a pack, though, so I justify picking it up. It's complicated.
You never watch the movie until you built the model, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the one thing I like about it is it's completely the generic, like, the main character inevitably finds out that they're Force sensitive and, you know, becomes a Jedi. But what I like about it is since it's in the kind of the interim, you know, Empire and Control, his master is blatantly just like he was like the ultra third tier Jedi who's not good at being a Jedi, doesn't understand any of the code, and like a lot of it, and like it's both cool from that, you know, that perspective as like, yeah, there must be like, presumably there were Jedis that weren't that great at it.
And Jedi dropouts.
The Farm League.
Right. And it's also interesting.
The Moisture Farm League.
Because like in some of the like fight scenes, it's a lot of like using Force Pull to clothesline people. Mm. And so it's actually kind of neat in some of the, some of those aspects.
Okay, yeah. Hmm. So I might just, you know, my completionist nature might compel me to buy that one as well when I snap up these other ones, and maybe it'll go on sale, who knows. But I'm always excited about more virtual pinball.
Yeah, okay, so that let's clarify here. Zen Studios, they make virtual pinball specifically for PC and Vita? You're playing these on your...
Correct, and I'm playing them on my Vita, although I have bought a significant number of... PC pinball tables, mm-hmm. and I own a Mac, and they are not on Mac, in anticipation of one day picking up an actual virtual pinball cabinet, which will happen at some point in the future.
Yeah, you got a big house.
Yeah, so it will happen at some point in the future, but I'm prepared for whenever it happens. Don't know when it will happen yet, though.
So if you had a virtual pinball cabinet, you'd like have like the bumper buttons, you know, wired in and that, you know, that sort of thing?
Yeah, and I think that's I actually literally the place that makes them is right near us in Ohio, which I found out serendipitously and actually went and visited them, which was really, really insanely cool because you get to see all the tables like in process of being made. But the one thing they don't have yet is an analog plunger. Sure. Where all the launch buttons are literal buttons. So you push it and you hold it down for a certain period of time.
And they just have a mouse pad on the lower right hand corner.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Is there actual technique to the how much you pull the plunger? Is that thing?
Yeah, varying by table. Sometimes it matters a lot. Sometimes it doesn't matter at all. It's kind of, you know, every table has its own style. But that I would not buy a table that did not have an analog plunger. And they promised me it was coming soon. So I've kind of, I still, like I said, I will own one at some point in the future. It is dependent on it having that mechanic.
See, I always liked the Terminator one that the plunger is just like a pistol grip and you pull the trigger.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And that's kind of lost in digital translation, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
But well, you just use a you use a I was about to say Point Break, but what's the use a time crisis gun?
Yeah, it's a really elaborate setup for not that large a part of the game.
Yeah,
but yeah, more good stuff from a good movie, from a good franchise, from a good company.
Mm-hmm.
It's good games.
We're talking about Point Break, right?
Yes. See it now in theaters everywhere.
There's probably a Point Break pinball table. I will tell you in a second. Hold on. Well, that's my story though. So
have you ever played have you ever played pinball while screaming ah?
Have
it's the multi-balls. You just shoot the gun over and over again.
Yes.
Ben, you got a story?
I do. So my story is about Activision Blizzard, which I didn't know was a company until now, but it's the parent company of both Activision and Blizzard and other companies.
Yeah.
Activision is basically video game Disney.
Yeah. So apparently they bought MLG this last week.
Ooh.
They did not specify the exact price. It's rumored to be about $40 million. But apparently they're going to be in control and taking the reins of it now. Apparently it's not going to affect any of the ongoing tournaments that they're going to have. And they claim that no one's going to be laid off in the transition. So it's mostly just acquiring an asset, I think, as opposed to taking over something. And even the CEO of MLG is going to be staying on. So, but now, I don't know, it's just an interesting development. It'll be interesting to see what Activision will do with MLG, since they're kind of considered to be evil.
Evilness aside, tell me, so you talk about assets. What assets does MLG have, aside from like maybe some personnel and existing sponsorship deals, and maybe some infrastructure for like spreading, you know, for actually like broadcasting stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I kind of think of it as like the NFL for video games, but definitely not as popular. But you
right,
know.
They've got. I mean, they to some extent are the most unifying force for infrastructure in the sense of like getting people to know where to go if they want to enter a tournament. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like if you want to see the tournaments, you go to MLG.
Yeah.
Although that's like borderline not true. Like the whole competitive gaming space is still very, very fragmented.
Right, right. So there are like teams and there are leagues, but they're organized under specific games, right? There are Dota teams and there are League of Legends teams, and there's a whole League of Legends league and all of that. Like, it's weird to see that this is a banner that they're trying to assemble that ostensibly, I think, would only include Activision games now. So like, is this a way for them to try and launch professional Call of Duty? Is that a thing people are interested in playing? Is that a thing people are interested in watching? I'm not asking sarcastically. I really have no idea.
Counter-Strike is not under Activision or Blizzard, right?
That's all Valve.
Proving that even Valve can make bad games.
Shots fired. From an AWP across the map, no scope.
Me too.
I feel like ideally they'll take the Valve approach, you know, with Steam and, you know, be game agnostic. But I could see, you know, some advantages for them. This does, even if they do that, give them a bit of a bully pulpit in terms of, you know, making whatever game they want competitive.
Yeah.
I also wonder, I'm trying to think if it was on here or, you know, something else I was listening to or reading discussing the idea that, at least with Blizzard, to a significant degree, like Hearthstone and, you know, some whatever the Heroes of the Storm doesn't exactly have a true competitive
StarCraft. You're thinking of StarCraft.
Well, does it have a true competitive culture other than just the fact that doesn't exactly have much in the way of professionals, just has a lot of amateurs that like doing it and therefore kind of do the populist competitive culture.
I will say though, a couple of months ago, or maybe about a month ago, They announced that they were significantly ratcheting up their prize pools. Sure. So they, while, you know, there's a whole separate discussion on to what extent Heroes of the Storm and Hearthstone belong in esports. They clearly made moves in advance of this deal to at least put the money behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I'm wondering, I hate using this term just because it, you know, can kind of have connotations and rhetoric I don't mean, but I wonder if to a certain degree this could kind of be a kind of a move, anti-elitist move, in terms of, you know, there's a market for, you know, esports on Blizzard games, at least some of them. But, you know, maybe there's some concern that, you know, more professional organizations wouldn't want to take them on because it's predominantly popular with amateurs. I don't know.
So it wasn't until you guys started mentioning StarCraft and Hearthstone and Heroes of the Storm that I realized that this is probably more about the Blizzard side of things than the Activision side of things.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So again, this just illustrates how clueless I am about this. This to me just reads as them playing catch up. They can't build the infrastructure around this that Valve and Riot have. So like we're going to make an acquisition to try and catch up and get our, you know, just kind of get our own juice behind this.
Yeah, it's the megacorp thing of like, oh, esports are going to be a thing. Jeeves, give me the biggest esport thing.
Enrique, fetch me MLG.
You know, could it also be, and I honestly, I don't understand business, that's, you know, kind of not my thing, but I mean, could also just be, presumably MLG makes money, and therefore it's in its best interest to own a thing which makes money?
Does it make money?
If it exists, esports makes money, and yeah.
I mean,
you know,
that specific arm of esports, I suppose.
You're paying out the prize pools for all this. You're selling maybe some tickets, but the vast majority of people are watching online, so I don't think you're recouping it in ticket sales. Maybe there's sponsorship deals in it. My guess at this point is that it's probably a bet on the future, and it's not making a ton of money right now, or it's making just enough to get by. But as I just said, esports are a thing, and it's a thing that is only getting more popular. So I can see someone saying, hey, our 5-year plan, what is the world going to look like, you know, half a decade from now, probably should be investing in esports infrastructure.
Well, and I mean, to be fair, if you know, video games are going to be real sports, then likely, like real sports, no one's going to watch most of them, but they're still going to, there's somehow have a professional league. Yeah. I mean, there's presumably professional curlers in the world, but most people don't follow curling.
That's what we need is the tribalism. Where's my Cincinnati Counter-Strike team?
I've heard people talk about that, and mostly it's down to like nationality, right? Like there are, you know, tons of Korean teams, and the American teams. You know, I normally don't feel bad talking about things I don't really know about. I can normally at least feign, you know.
Should be the motto of the show.
Well, it's the motto of my life, much to a lot of people's disdain. But I feel especially bad because I'm out of my depth here.
Sure.
So it's hard for me to know. I've heard people talk about like, oh, what we need is exactly what you said, Dennis, which is, you know, like an identity to rally behind, where it's not that we're rooting for an individual player. We're rooting for this because, you know, this is where I live. This is where I'm from. This is, you know, XYZ. But right now it seems to be mostly about
later in the episode, by the way, I'm going to let you know. Okay. I'm not going to tell you why. I'm just going to let you know that's foreshadowing.
I've even heard that contrary-wise with like the fall of popularity of boxing in America being partially that it used to be that, you know, there was the hometown hero and, you know, the best, you know, professional boxers would travel around the country and take on, you know, the various hometown people. So people cared about it. Yeah. Whereas now it's just a bunch of, you know, super soldiers, you know, punching each other or, Not punching each other as
it's Floyd Mayweather diving away from.
Yeah, I said whatever. Not punching each other sometimes. Yeah.
Wow, I feel like have I been in a coma for 3 years? Like, is this a different show now?
It's a podcast for people who love beer and boxing and sometimes video games.
Yeah. Do we have anything else to say about this acquisition? This is interesting.
Doesn't sound like it. I do have one more small story, however.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Permissible.
We'll allow it. So it's just to mention that Tomb Raider is coming out on PC this month, at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. It, however, is not coming out for PS3 until, it says right now, a year from when it came out on Xbox, which is in November.
Yeah.
Which is a long time.
What about Mac?
They've been pretty good about, like, at least putting the first one was on Mac, like, right away. So I can't imagine them not doing that.
In the first one, I played on my Mac without a dedicated hard drive. Yep. I just streamed it. My dedicated graphics card.
I might be picking that up on Mac then.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely check the specs, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think you mean PS4 versus PS3.
Yes, I do mean that. Apologies.
Yeah. Other thing that made me feel more included. So.
Yeah. Huh. I'm curious, but I haven't played the first one. I've heard good things about two. Fans of the genre like.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I'll go ahead with mine. This is also going to be pretty quick as well. Square Enix is continuing their streak of releasing their old Final Fantasy games on modern kind of systems. So right now, the newest one ready to come out is a port of Final Fantasy IX is going to be coming to PC and smartphones. Okay.
This is one of the big dogs, right?
I really like Final Fantasy IX. It's a bit of an odd duck in that it is a huge tonal departure from 7 and 8, which is where a lot of people enter the series. But 9 is really good and has a lot of good characters and stuff like that. This is going to be a little strange because I'm looking at a video of this right now, and they're keeping the original graphics, unlike with Final Fantasy VI, which just recently came out and has these just awful, like, Korean animation look kind of things. It's real. They should have just kept the pixel art because it would have been infinitely better, but they somehow saw fit to just ruin this thing. However, Final Fantasy IX it's going to have the original graphics, the polygonal, you know, textured polygons and whatnot, and what appears to be upscaled CG like cinematics and stuff, which is really cool. One of the weird things is I think that Final Fantasy IX was so well engineered for the PlayStation hardware and resolution that seeing this scaled up and as crisp as this is makes it look worse. I kind of wish that it had the blocky textures again, because it kind of had this awesome mosaic like look to it. That really stood out. I understand.
This is a girl you definitely want to sleep with the lights off.
I don't want to put it in exactly those terms, but like that's a thing though, right? Like, just because you can upscale this doesn't mean you should.
With the lights off, I mean. Sorry.
just because you can't upscale this doesn't mean you should, because like
I hear you.
It looked really good on the PS1. Like it was brightly colored, but not like garishly so. Like there were a lot of greens and browns, and just looking at all this kind of blown out and super crisp, it looks like it's running on a bad emulator. And I don't know if I'm down with that.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be a problem with a lot of games, you know, where it's like when you play them, it's the best graphics for the time. But yeah. Then 10 years later, it's a little bit laughable.
But it's weirdly because that's not the case, right? Like when they updated
Resident Evil.
Yeah. Well, Resident Evil was like a complete redo. Right. Mm-hmm. It was like that was a complete remake. I'm thinking more like the upscaling Shadow of the Colossus for HD. Granted, that was a 4-year difference, and this is a 15-year difference, and it's spanning multiple generations, mm-hmm. and quadrupling the resolution or something like that. So I understand that's not an apples to apples comparison, but like, I don't know. I'm happy that they're preserving it, but it's one of those things where they're not going to make everybody happy, because if they catered it to me, people would say this was like ass on my retina screen, and I would say, yeah, you're kind of right, because this was meant to look good on XYZ, but I fired this up on my Vita recently, so I could take a look at it. Sure. And it looks fine on there, even though that is a higher resolution screen. I don't know if it's because of the different stuff that they do. No, it wasn't my Vita, it was my PS3. I'm sorry.
I was so excited.
I knew I had to wrestle with the PSN infrastructure somehow. check and see if it's available, because like it's still a really fun game, but
I have it on disc for PS1.
Oh yeah,
which I think means it runs on my PS3.
Oh yes, it absolutely does. PS1 games run native.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's there. It's waiting for me. I've played partway through it. I'm just bad at finishing Final Fantasy games, apparently. since you mentioned it, I got the Ico and Shadow of the Colossus HD collection for my little sister for Christmas.
Oh, yeah?
And it has been the most fun thing in the world getting updates from her as she plays through Ico.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, you know, I played that back in college, my gosh. Mm-hmm. But I just knew that it's like those are kind of two must-play games. I she didn't have them, so I gave them to her. And she's been, you know, giving me updates on like, oh my God, I've got stuck on this one place and had to look up a fact. It was so frustrating, but I'm glad I'm through. Or like the shadow people I always underestimate them, and it's like, I gotta be way more scared of them than I am. And it's just wonderful to watch someone come to that fresh.
It's really funny because it's kind of an anti-pattern, right? You don't want to look at a younger sibling and say, boy, it'd be really fun if you liked all the same things I did and if you just lived the same life that I did, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that isn't the case. You want them to be their own person. And I'm sensitive to that to the point where I try not to, with younger relatives, I try not to say like, hey, here, have this thing. I like it, so you're going to like it too. But over this past Halloween, my little sister, I don't see her very often. Yeah, because she lives over at my dad's, but I was over at a party there, and she started talking to me about like, what's happening with PT? Have you played Until Dawn yet? She's been exposed to all these horror games. It's weird seeing that out of its context, and I'm having this conversation about stuff I'm super super enthusiastic about out of nowhere that she just knows to have a conversation with me about.
So you got a fake being like, huh, well, I don't know, baby.
No, I was like, oh gosh, you're breaking my heart. We had a genuine conversation about you know, about PT, and I keep forgetting. No, you're not 6 years old. You're 16 years old. Like it makes sense for you to see that because you watch a lot of streamers.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, so
I've got a nephew that's God now he's probably in that, like 13 range. Mm-hmm. And my mental concept of him is completely that he's 3 years old. Like he will never not be 3 years old in my mind.
Yeah. Oh boy. We're a bunch of uncles. Oh, and that's the end.
I actually have one real quick if we want to do it.
Oh, okay.
Sure. So apparently on the Shenmue 3 Kickstarter, they opened up a while back kind of secondary funding, a second chance for people to donate, but only via PayPal.
Right.
And I guess, you know, they were going to be able to get, you know, all of the, you know, rewards and stuff that people would normally be able to get by backing the PayPal. However, the company that's making it, I guess, then decided to let the original backers vote on that. And they voted not to let them get any rewards. Ooh, so now they're not getting any rewards.
Yeah, that's fucking shitty.
Yeah, so going back to every so often, elitism is probably a legitimate, like, complaint.
Yeah, well, this is like some fucking game theory. The Joker's giving you a button that'll blow these other people up kind of shit. Right? This is a group of people collectively saying, no, fuck you, I've got mine.
So I don't know what the difference is here. Like, if you pay via PayPal, you're still paying, right?
I think the issue is that they weren't people who got in on the initial period to support the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So after it was funded, after it was guaranteed to be a success, then these are all the people who now want in.
Who basically want to pre-order this and get all the bonuses on top of it.
Yeah, which is such a fake, like, why would you punish that?
Well, I could also see if somebody was like, well, I was a backer. I shouldn't give this person a shitty voice. I was a backer. I made sure to get in there on the 30 days. I was part of this. I don't want to reward what's his name, Yu Suzuki, for going out and seeking more funding from public sources. So I want to make sure, like, this, you know, that this campaign was told, you know, in that case, they really shouldn't have promised them all the original rewards. Like, if they knew that was going to be, if they knew it was a possibility that people were going to be upset, take the vote, before you take the money. Ask your community before you take the money.
Yeah, whose idea was it to go back and vote?
I don't know.
That's the real fuck up of this whole situation.
Well, hindsight's 2020, and what they should have done is create like a different set of rewards for people. Say, hey, you can pre-order this. You know, you're gonna get some kind of bauble. There's gonna remain some Kickstarter exclusive stuff, and I understand that, right? Like, we've done.
Oh, but if the bauble was something that Kickstarters didn't get, that would be Armageddon.
Yes.
Oh God!
You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Here, you cannot let anyone who kickstarted this know that you're going and getting more money. You have to keep them completely separate. And that's my new pitch for a rom-com.
Keep it separated.
Yeah. Huh. You're dating all the Kickstarters on one side of the restaurant and all the PayPal backers on the other side of the restaurant. And you have to change outfits in between.
It's Shenmue 3's company.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And that's me pulling away on my motorcycle.
Oh, we've upgraded to a motorcycle now.
That was on me.
Do we have anything more to say? So I think that we have explored most of the alternatives, and nobody is happy in any of them.
We can move on before I die laughing.
Yep, we can. We can move on.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it, everybody, all the nice people. Dennis, what was the question this week?
It is, and I believe we are contractually obligated to do a New Year's question. That's part of your contract for allowing you to exist in a new year. So what is your New Year's gaming resolution? Any gaming-related goals or achievements that you want to accomplish in 2016, we want to hear about.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to pick up with Sam here, who first writes in saying, finish at least a good portion of the growing virtual stack of visual novels I've been accruing, and at least put an honest effort into some of the older games that I've bought off Steam. Off the top of my head, I still haven't even installed Thief Deadly Shadows, Hitman Blood Money, or I Have No Mouth and I'm a Scream.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has a lot of relationship to our recent backlog question, too. At least in terms of the answers that we got here, install them. All those are good games.
I like that he started. I was going to compliment him for having narrowed down to just visual novel games. Like, I need to take care of my narrow down visual novel backlog. But then he goes and names a bunch of non-visual novel games. So.
I saw I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. I really need to make sure I enunciate that, or else it sounds like I Have No Mouth and I'm a Scream.
Yeah.
but yeah, I saw it there. I was like, oh yeah, like adventure games, like story-based stuff, but all of those are like good. Let's see here. David, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, finish Fallout 4 and Scholar of the First Sin before Dark Souls 3 comes out without ruining my work or relationship. Seems dicey at this point.
You are trying to thread the needle, my friend.
You have 3 months. That is perfectly fine. You can do it. I don't know your life, Jonathan, but
skip the side quest.
Says a man who's played it, you know, just follow your heart. Follow your heart.
Be critical path, Johnny.
How much time did you put into your first run of Fallout 4, Ben?
Probably in the neighborhood of about 40 hours or so.
Okay. That's reasonable. Guess. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, that's doable.
I still really want to know if it's possible for your son to just end up as an old man.
Is that a spoiler, Ben?
I will not comment on anything regarding the critical path or the side quest or anything that would be a spoiler.
Or anything about the game. Cool.
Fallout 4? I'm not sure if there's a Fallout 4 or not.
Who sent you?
It takes place somewhere in the northeast part of the United States. I don't want to spoil it, but...
And Scholar of the First Sin will not take you as long as your first run of Dark Souls 2 did, but only if you have already played the DLCs and you know what those are like. It will take you longer than you think, but not as long as you think.
Okay.
What? Yeah.
Longer than you hope, not as long as you think.
Answer a fool according to his folly. Do not answer a fool according to his folly.
Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I'll never manage one on that list, so three is always a good fallback. So, yeah. My 2016 resolution is to give something up. It's been 20 years now, and I've got to give up my addiction. I will not play Sensible World of Soccer this year. I won't. Maybe just one game. Yarg.
You made him sound like a pirate.
That's my reading of ARG.
To be fair, we don't know what he does for a living.
True, we're making a lot of assumptions about people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Been making a lot of assumptions that people aren't pirates lately.
We have a large listener base in Somalia.
Yes.
So, see, that's the thing about the Sensible World of Soccer. If it was the Wacky World of Soccer, you could just say, no, you know what, I don't have time for this, I've outgrown you. But he's like, come on, it'll just take like a second. You know,
it's very sensible. Fine.
Yeah, no, it's very reasonable, it seems like. But then, is that a Super Nintendo game? I've heard of it, and I know about it because of its name.
Yeah, I looked it up earlier today, and I forgot to look at what system it's on. But it's got a huge cult following, so.
Yeah. That seems like one of those things that would have ended up being a series or not. Let me do a quick look here. Oh, it's a... it was designed by Sensible Software. There we go. Yeah.
This is a like really a very rational endeavor.
Yep. Yeah.
They're actually the arch nemesis of, Ridiculous Fishing?
Oh, it's from the age of, like, come work for Sensible, my boy. Make a future for yourself.
So it wasn't quite a series, but they did do a re-release on Xbox Live Arcade in 2007. So, let's see here. Dennis, what does Robin say?
Robin keeps it simple. He says, I will not lose my shit whilst playing Dark Souls 3.
But it's going to be fun to lose your shit while you play Dark Souls 3. Again, follow your heart.
See, I'm wondering, you know, does that mean, like, as in I'll make sure to bank all of my souls? Or does that mean as in I won't, you know, flip out and, you know, run into traffic? You know, it could go either way.
He's doing the double sadist route where he's burying his frustration that he'll have. It'll make it twice as frustrating.
See, I read it as like losing my shit, like, oh, I'm really excited, like anywhere from I'm climbing the walls to I'm stripping the drywall off of my walls like I'm peeling an apple.
I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
Just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. He came back. Solaire's the final boss. Amazing. You know, something like that. Christopher writes in saying, I'd like to finish some game, any game. And then he writes, ah, ha, 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 ha.
You counted those, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I just made it sound like I did. I think I stopped three ha-ha short.
I'm impressed you kept a straight face to that, Chris.
we've touched on that a bit. David, what does Eric say?
Eric says, I want to try to beat those games everyone says are classics, but never find the time or interest to put time into. Sorry, I think I'll try to play Planescape Torment, so I can finally understand why Gary loves it so much.
I love it too.
But maybe you guys can suggest other games I absolutely
love. Me too,
have to
I love it.
Through.
What are we talking about?
What, Planescape Torment?
Okay, yes, I love that.
You do?
I love Lamp. Planescape.
It's fun to like things.
So do you guys have a classics you'd recommend?
It's tough to come up with something on the spot.
What's the cutoff line for something being a classic?
5 years.
I would say at the point where it has influence.
Because, like, would you consider The Last of Us to be a classic? Because I probably would.
So it's weird.
I would say not, just because, like, to me, I think classic is a game that's important to later games.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny because I think you found my line, because I would say that that Spec Ops The Line is a must play. Kind of classic is a weird word, but it's like, I would definitely say play Spec Ops because it's a really short commitment. But but The Last of Us falls after that, so it's somewhere between those two is where the line is.
It's like, what's the required reading?
Yeah,
I guess I'd maybe say at the point where people start name dropping it as influences on Kickstarters, it's then a classic.
Yeah. Oh, here's my answer, Eric. Play Alpha Protocol.
Okay, yeah, that's a, but not on PC.
I would also say that, like, get it on Xbox is what I recommend. Especially, I mean, it's right there in line. Those are both Chris Avellone joints, But it's right in the wheelhouse.
I'll toss out Knights of the Republic 2, since that's a long game
and another Chris Avellone joint.
Yeah, well, the first one as well as the second one.
Okay,
I would say I'd probably go with Stalker: Shadow of Chernobyl.
Okay.
Either that one or the Call of
Pripyat.
Yes, I don't know how to pronounce Russian things.
It's not your language.
Yeah, I would say the first one's definitely the game that most matters. The second one's the last one's the game that's most playable. So,
yeah, split the difference. Dennis, how about you?
Oh man, I got nothing. Guitar Hero, this is the weird metagame of I'm trying to guess games that he hasn't already played.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd be like, go play Shadow Colossus, required reading, a classic. But I imagine he's probably already played it. But if not, go play that one. Or I was going to zag and say, hey, if you haven't gotten into Guitar Hero, you should experience that. Or I don't even know. Like, that's I could go into an infinite loop of trying to guess what he has and has not played.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, look up any top 10 list of game in this console generation, and you can pick from that, and it'll probably be fine.
Yeah. So, and I will also say, don't feel bad for not having played those things, and don't set out to say, I'm going to play 5 of these this year. That is not achievable. You're only going to disappoint yourself. Set out and say, the first one of these I'm going to try and play is Planescape, and then download it, keep it on your desktop, and then just make a modest attempt to
sit for 5 years.
Yeah, which is what you've done already. This is how you got into that mess. No, but I mean, just like set a realistic goal for yourself. Don't say like, this is going to be the year of George. You know, it's not going to happen.
I love the game George. It was a fantastic game.
And the George of the Jungle adaptation.
There has to be a game called George somewhere, right?
Probably on DOS. I need to check the Abject Suffering registry. let's see here. Ben, what does Kilo say?
Kilo says, I will finish making a game. I feel like I know enough to tell when my work is bad, but not enough to make it good. So it's easy to get disheartened 70% of the way through.
Yeah. I can't speak to making a game, but I can speak to general creative endeavors. Try not to self-edit too much. Let other people do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Kilo, if you actually have a game made that you can share, I will be happy to talk about it. I don't know if we can do it. I'd be completely down for playing a game that one of our listeners has made.
That might, okay, here's my recommendation, Kilo. If you haven't finished a game, finish a game and keep it a secret forever. Show people your second game, but don't show it to them saying like, hey, can you talk about this on a show? That's too much pressure, too much exposure. Your third game, that's the one after you've got your legs under you. That's what you want to get out with. So like, even if Kilo does share this with you, Dennis, don't talk about it on a show.
That's right. It'll just be my secret forever game.
Yeah.
He's got to get his cave legs first.
let's see here, Dennis, what does So say?
He says, probably finished my PS3 backlog, but it's 20 plus games deep.
That's you naive child.
So much backlog. I have Far Cry 3 in my hands.
Right
I'm just
now?
Waiting to until
Sorry.
Not literally right now. But I that is like the last PS3 juggernaut that I feel like I need to finish. I'm sure there's others out there that I don't know of, but yeah, that's the last one that's like actively on my radar. I really should play that game that I haven't played yet. Mm-hmm. And once I beat that, I don't know where I would go next with the PS3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I've looked at those top 20 lists or what have you, and I've done a pretty good job rounding out the games that are at the top of them. Yeah. So
let's see here. Nathan writes in saying, finish my PS3 backlog. Condition my English Mastiff to associate Dark Souls 3 with nap time. Somehow this worked with my cat and Dark Souls 2, he says.
Pavel's dog.
And then finally, number 3, attend my first Smash Brothers tournament and get my ass kicked. Yeah, that's good to be realistic.
That sounds like not just attend, but enter.
Yeah.
Ambitious.
Yeah, contribute to.
I think it's a bad thing if you just attend the tournament and get your ass kicked.
just get in there and really start some shit, you know?
I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, like they have soccer hooliganism. You know, we have Smash Bros. Hooliganism, mm-hmm. MLG.
Welcome to your final destination.
No, that's apparently a League of Legends tournament.
What?
Was it League of Legends or Dota? Those two are synonymous in my mind. But where the one player like beat up a member of the press or something like that. So go to one of those if you want horrible people, horrible fans.
Oh, man. Let's see here. David, what does Christian say?
Christian says, first, I hope to finish Dark Souls 3 in time to do a playthrough with Bonfireside Chat. Second, I plan on playing one game outside my comfort zone, something I normally wouldn't play.
Might I recommend Sensible World of Soccer?
I was also going to say Danganronpa.
Yeah, that's outside of a lot of people's comfort zones.
See, I was just going to say put on the anime filter on Steam, and you can definitely find things that will be outside your comfort zone.
Yeah, it's recommending those to me because I always look at them. just to see like out of morbid curiosity. Wreck. What's that?
Like a train wreck.
Yes, exactly. Ben, what does David say?
David says, play more games with friends. My schedule doesn't always work well with my gaming friends between time zone conflicts and having a kid, but I'm going to make an honest effort to do that more often.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. And that is also very difficult to do as well, especially if you're doing it in person.
Especially if they're in different time zones in person.
Oh yeah. Well, I missed that detail. Sorry. I was trying to figure out the order here.
You got to edge up at the state line.
That'd be impressive. That's really a situation where you have to like pick a horse and ride it. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to find a game and know at the start of it that everyone's going to like it for an extended period of time.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Dustin say?
He says, I hope to actually complete a game this year, first in RPG Maker, then start a second game in Game Maker. So I think he's talking about complete as in make, mm-hmm. Not complete as in finish, one that's already made. Then start a second game in Game Maker now that I have the Pro Edition from the Humble Bundle earlier this year. Final goal is to learn Unity. Man, these are good goals. Mm-hmm. As for regular gaming, I plan to pick up Dark Souls 3 and play along with Bonfireside Chat, as Christian Reeves said above.
Yeah, that's not that hard to do.
Yeah.
like honestly, we don't spoil anything after, like, we set the spoiler wall, and you don't have to beat it within 2 weeks like we do. Like, you can just play along at a leisurely pace of one area per 2 weeks. Like, it's fine. Yeah.
Planning on doing the whole like mad sprint again with 3?
We have to.
Sure.
Like, there's no way around it.
That's impressive. So you got your calendar blocked and everything?
Yes.
Have you requested off time?
Uh-huh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they know.
Do you need like a crack team to assist you through it?
To assist me, like, if you guys want to come over and hang out and watch it, that's fine.
Okay, I might be down for that.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, like, you know, it's mostly just gonna, like, that week is always just me sitting alone and being real angry, so.
We can sit together and be
right. I mean, so it's not any different from most other weeks, actually, so we're fine.
It's just concentrated anger.
Yeah, oh boy. Let's see here. Alan writes in saying, and this is an interesting one. No digital game purchases this year.
Whoa, is pretty interesting.
Whoa, let's not say anything we don't mean right here. All right.
Well, it might be just a strong opening gambit in a negotiation.
Right. That is a humble good old resolution right there.
Yeah, I think that I'm not here to police your thing, but like I could see not buying a bundle and not participating in Steam sales. I could honestly see that. Like, you know what? I just if those are up, I'm not going to let that make me buy a game I otherwise would not buy. However, I don't even know what's coming out in 2016, so forgive me. But like, if you just wanted to get Dark Souls 3 and you didn't want any of the shit around it, like, would you just buy that physically?
All right, so I'm going to come at this from the angle of like the manual purist here, but there is something to going and physically getting a game that's nice. Like that, it feels good. I feel like there's more to it than just starting a random download. So
yep.
There's it's like your good old fashioned wet shave in the age of all the Super Pro 6000 razors.
Yeah. If Alan likes going to stores though, he can really easily go to stores. Like it's easy to get that into the schedule. I wonder if it's
just,
a backlog
thing. Just go
and
like, you know, smell the smells.
Yeah. You know, just walk into a GameStop and really smell the BO.
Yes.
Yeah. And David,
can I help you, sir?
Hey, I was that asshole for a while.
Drink it all in.
David, what does Carlos say?
Sure. Carlos says, sort of related to gaming, I started training in capoeira a few years ago because of my love for Eddie Gordo from the Tekken series. I used to think his moveset was too agile for someone like me to do in real life, but I've already mastered a good chunk of them. I would love to be able to perform all the strikes, some of the form throws are not feasible, of his moveset as a real human being by January 17th.
Oh, and then what you have to do is you have to start going around to cons, like cosplayed awesome, and just like...
That's freaking fantastic.
Yeah, just like throwing people into tables and shit.
So if you should happen to have any advice on Melur de Compasso, I'm trying to learn that now.
Did you just say I'd like to have dinner with you in Hawaiian?
Yes, that is exactly what I said.
Okay.
No, I'm trying to get the hang of that now because it also shows up in the martial art I do. But I'm watching a lot of capoeira tutorial videos because, you know, they kind of specialize in it.
I like that something from a video game has inspired him to do something from real life, though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And especially if it's martial arts, because martial arts are amazing.
Yeah.
David, have you seen, I don't know how frequently you are on Slack, if at all, the discussion extended on how many listeners the host could take on in a fight?
No, I missed that. That's actually part of my New Year's resolution is to actually follow this Slack.
Yeah, that's a good time.
Yeah, I think it's mostly fueled by Jala speculating. There was, I think last week maybe on the episode it came up on how many hosts it would, you know, like, you know, how many fifth graders could you take on? How many listeners would it take to overwhelm the host?
How many horse-sized listeners? Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many listener-sized horses?
Nice.
The answer is probably not many, but then there's a lot of factors that go into it. So you can follow it on Slack. It's in depth.
I might have mentioned this on the show before. I know one of the most entertaining forum posts I've ever read is on one of the martial arts forums I read. You know, people found that how many 5-year-olds could you take at a fight? Facebook type poll. Mm-hmm. And so the rest of the post was just people from various martial arts discussing like different strategies for approaching combat with a horde of 5-year-olds.
And so he sweep the leg.
Sweep the leg. Sweep the leg, Johnny. <Yeah.
laughs> So we should probably do our recommendations since this section is running just a little bit long. I'm going to do mine because it's super quick. I am beyond making backlog promises. However, I realize that due to assignment play, I've not really brought anything to this show in terms of play recently. Like, oh, nothing to the grind. Some of that has been good.
No game.
Yeah. Some of that has been, you know, like, oh, it's a good thing because episodes run long or whatever. But like, it sucks because like the games that I bring here are games that I play for fun, even though they are for a show. Right. So I want to try and at least bring something.
For a show, they wind up on a show.
Right, right. Well, no, I have to say they're for a show because otherwise I feel like I'm wasting my life. I can't do something just for fun. Like, like that's
not sensible.
Right. Like, that's for masturbating and driving with the windows down. Like, you know?
Equally sinful.
At the same time?
Well, but yeah, no, I just, I want to try and play more games for me. Therefore for you, you know,
love it.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Sure. I think for me, I don't know. I've got a little bit of, you know, play less games, type thing, which we didn't see this year, which kind of surprised me. Because usually that's a common answer, but yeah, a little bit of that. And then I think, I'd like to be, Bloodborne in the original Dark Souls.
Oh yeah.
So,
I have good goals.
Yeah.
Let's see here, Ben. How about you?
Yeah. So my goal is to catch up on my PC backlog, which is basically any good game in the last 10 years.
What? Not ambitious at all.
Well,
that gives you something to chew
on.
PC. Though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have a gaming PC now, man?
Yes, and I just got a USB Wi-Fi in the mail today. So. Fingers crossed I should be able to download and install games on my computer now.
Neat.
So I tried to do it via USB last week, but it did not work. Mm. So I figure there are more things that needed to be downloaded or transferred.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I have, it was kind of a pre-New Year's resolution of completing a fractal dungeon in Guild Wars 2. Which I did actually accomplish, so I feel very good about that. But I think for 2016, my resolution is to get Luke into games. Ooh. I'm just gonna spread that sickness. He should probably towards the back half of the year be getting old enough that he can do something with a controller. Hmm. So I wanna get that started.
Download like Cannibalt or like one of those one button games like that, and then just them. Yeah,
it'd be fantastic.
One of those one button things that doesn't require. I mean, he's still a very young child. So yeah. maybe this might, I don't mean to, again, I don't know your life, but are you thinking like get him into watching you play fun games that look like cartoons?
Yeah. Or something like you said, something with like a one button game or that he can almost like what is the MS Paint equivalent where he can have a controller in his hand and be doing something with the screen and enjoy it. That's about all the criteria I'm going
to
set.
I was about to say Mario Galaxy, but that doesn't feel good because that mode is pejoratively called girlfriend mode, and I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Get a Oculus Rift in Minecraft.
Oh, yeah.
There you go, yeah. That's all kids actually come standard with Minecraft now. That's upgrade of this generation. Everyone just naturally, genetically knows how to play it.
No, it's good. He's got a good future. He's going to go off and he's going to major in redstone engineering. It'll be fine. Everything's gonna be great.
Yeah, no, it'll be perfect.
Yeah, work at your redstone arsenal.
Cool. Well, thank you everybody for responding in. I hope that you have had a fantastic beginning to the year, and let's make 2016 great. And we can continue making 2016 great by getting more responses like this at facebook.com/ the Level Podcast. There we go. I forgot which I was on.
Saved it.
Oh gosh. The grind. Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. David had to go to work in the break there. We ran a little bit long, and he has a situation where he has to work sometimes at night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we will soldier on with just the three of us. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I can go.
Okay.
I've only played one game this last week, but I played and beat Life is Strange. Beat,
oh, cool.
Quote unquote.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You can probably say literally nothing about it.
I could say some. I could say some things about it. It's like a mix of The Walking Dead. With like a narrative of like the butterfly effect, kind of. So, I mean, it's fun. It's like a game. It's like a choose your own adventure novel. So there's a lot of like interesting choices they do. They do a good job with pacing, where with each chapter of the game, they'll kind of expand the definition of what you can do and kind of like your powers. So you definitely feel more and more powerful, or it definitely changes with each chapter. So that's cool. And there's some really good twists in the story. So it was very satisfying. The fifth chapter is the only one that I felt a little weird about. And it was similar feeling to playing The Walking Dead. And I don't know if there's anything inherently wrong with the narrative or not. It just might be like whenever something draws to a close, it might not be how you expect it to be.
Right.
So it just might be a product of that. But overall, I enjoyed it a lot. But I think similar when we were talking with the multiplayer, I feel like this is one of the first games that I played that was kind of outside of my comfort zone, because you're playing as like a 18-year-old high school student. And so that's a role that I've not been familiar with much before. So it was kind of interesting playing that role, you know,
specifically an 18-year-old girl. Right.
Yeah. 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 So both the gender transition and like the idea of going back to high school were both kind of weird. So,
mm-hmm. So yeah. How do you feel? Cause I, on other shows, I've heard complaints that this sounds like 18-year-old women being written as, you know, being written like they are, 30-year-old game designer dudes.
I don't know. I guess.
I mean, did it stick out as being like tonally weird, or did they sell it? Was it a little bit too Diablo Cody? Like, how did the actual dialogue come across to you?
Yeah. So there were a lot of times where they would kind of, I'm not sure if it was like shoehorning or not, but they would definitely try and throw in vernacular of like a high school student. And basically, since I think I mentioned this last week, I don't know anyone in like 5 years either direction of that age group, you know?
Yeah.
And so, so it's kind of hard for me to know like what the actual, if it was authentic dialogue or not.
You also have to just put on the filter of like video game dialogue is generally bad. So how much of it is just like the plague of the medium right now versus actually having people write it poorly?
Yeah, that's another good point too. Is a lot of characters will come up and kind of give you exposition so that it could be a product of that as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would say overall though, it didn't get in the way of the interest of the narrative, and it didn't get in the way of some of the enjoyment of playing the game. I think there was only one puzzle that was like pretty annoying, and I had to look up how to beat it. Mm-hmm. And I think they even reference it later in the game, like of making fun of it, like realizing that it was kind of, yeah.
I mean, so they did that in
the episodic nature.
Yeah, they probably were able to get feedback from it and kind of make fun of it later. So
they did that in episode or in Walking Dead season one, right? Because episode one had that stupid battery puzzle, which was like one of the last real big holdovers from previous Telltale adventure games, right? And then there was something like episode 3 or 4 where they're like, of course I know how to put batteries into a fucking thing because I'm an adult. Yeah. So that's it's good, right? Like the fact that they can change things and adjust to things that, you know, that end up being dumb is a positive thing about the medium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the cool things they do in this game, similar to The Walking Dead, is they'll show you stats of all the decisions that you've made throughout the game, and they'll tell you what other people have chosen, and they'll give you the percentages. So it'll be like 20% did this, 80% did this. So that's kind of interesting. One of the things that's different, though, is some of the decisions you might not necessarily see. So like one of them might be like, did you find like this note in this person's room or whatever? And it's like, oh, no, I didn't. Like, I had no idea that was a thing.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So some of the narrative can be a little bit hidden, but not that's not a huge problem. It's just
that's like in Heavy Rain, the scene where you're trying to like clean up the crime scene.
Mm hmm.
And you choose when you leave. So you try to make sure you get everything. And then when you leave, it just zooms in on everything that you missed.
Yeah.
Gut-wrenching. Yeah.
Sorry, I accidentally turned on my R zone. that is a preview to next week's Abject Suffering. Continue. But yeah, it zooms in like you done fucked up.
Yeah.
Here's everything you did wrong.
Yep.
Here's what you will kick yourself for the next week about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
But yeah, overall, I'd say it's very satisfying. Yeah. I don't know if I would play through the game again to see all the choices. I'd probably just go through like YouTube to do it because it's a pretty long game. I would say I was only expecting it to be like maybe like an 8 hour game, but I would say it's probably closer to 18 or 20.
Oh, wow. So that's like 4 hours per episode. That's crazy.
It varies. Like the first episode's like only maybe 1 or 2 hours, but the last like two or three start to get up for like 3 or 4 per episode.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I'm happy that they're not like they are not marketing this as season one. Like if this can be I like the idea of this being a complete run.
Yeah.
We really need gaming's equivalent of the Twilight Zone, where each episode or, you know, maybe a small arc of episodes is self-contained and people could just feel free to run wild. Like I don't feel like we've gotten that yet.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, that just echoes my constant call for the gaming short story collection.
Yeah.
Which we got, like, with 400 Days or whatever. Like, yeah. Hmm. Neat. You played anything else, Ben?
That is all I have played, so I gotta pick something else up now.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I have a one-hit wonder week as well, but it's been quite wonderful, so I'm happy to talk about it. I picked up and started playing Freedom Wars on the Vita, it's a PlayStation Plus game. It is the last like notable Vita exclusive AAA quote unquote title that I can think of that came out on Vita, and I've really been enjoying it. Mm-hmm. So the premise for the game is probably a good portion of what I enjoy. Because the idea is that the world has grown short on resources, and it's divided the world into these kind of city-states called panopticons, which are all kind of battling for resources. And it's also created this caste system where you have citizens who are like, you know, the
You're
the elite.
Describing the Hunger Games.
Yeah, probably. No. Well, almost. Yes, probably. Yeah. No, maybe.
Okay, go on. I just wanted to get in front of this. You could admit to reading the Hunger Games. A lot of people did.
Oh no, I love the Hunger Games.
Okay.
Well, excuse me. I love the first two books of the Hunger Games. The third book can pound sand. Anyway, it's got the citizens, but this is in every city state. Citizens who are kind of like the elite, and that life is supposed to be as great as possible for them. And then you've got the sinners, who is this sect of people who just them being born is labeled a crime against humanity. And they're given
women.
Oh man, we took a turn there.
Yeah, no, sorry. Take that, religion. No, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Hey, now. They're given a million year sentence, a million year prison sentence just for existing. Mm-hmm. Because their existence is a drain on humanity's resources, and all the remaining resources are supposed to be directed towards making life as good as possible. Mm-hmm. And so their way to serve their term and work off years of their sentence is to go out and battle other panopticons for resources, essentially.
It is the Hunger Games.
It's a step to the left of Hunger Games.
I don't know.
Hunger Games is just battle royale.
Yeah. Okay. So that's probably. I'm trying to be current.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be hip and with it with the kids.
But the entire thing is like you are a sinner and you're supposed to be working off your sentence. And so it's like, hey, you've got to do public good. You've got to, you know, maximize the good of the people. And but as a sinner, you have no rights. And when I say you have no rights, the game really doubles down on that theme. You have to earn the right to buy the right to anything in the game. So you start out, you aren't even allowed to lie down to sleep.
Okay. Do you have to buy the right to blink?
What's that?
Do you have to buy the right to blink?
You have to buy the right to take more than five steps in your cell without being penalized. And it's woven in pretty cool because, like, you know, the game opens up, you kind of get through some of the tutorial stuff, and then you're in your cell and you're like, okay, what do I do next? And you're just kind of walking around getting the lay of the land. And suddenly this like buzzer goes off and you get this notification, like, you have been penalized 10 years for taking more than five steps in your cell. You know, you're draining the Panopticon's resources by unnecessarily wasting energy.
By breathing, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to buy the right to walk. You have to buy the right to talk to other people. So it's like, it's this super weird dynamic, but it's really intriguing. It's almost kind of fun as a setting for the game. You have to unfocus your eyes a little bit because it doesn't always completely make sense, which is okay. Mm-hmm. But for example, in the world, the supposedly you're resource constrained and everyone's battling just to survive or to mm-hmm. have the resources to survive. And yet they have the resources to assign a personal robot to every single person to monitor them and make sure they don't break any rules.
Well, it has to be a net gain, right?
Yeah, right. So that's kind of like, okay. Or like I said, you're not allowed to lie down to sleep. So you have to buy the right to lie down to sleep when you would think you would be more efficient at doing your job if they would let you actually get well rested. But you know, that you can kind of just unfocus your eyes a little bit and that's fine.
Yeah.
So super, super intriguing world. And the idea that you're kind of like fighting your way up, there's something going on in terms of, you know, you're going to break this cycle and you or someone in your party is the chosen one. And, you know, so you know that the status quo is not going to stay the same. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten far enough in the game for things to really break yet.
So how does this play? Like, what kind of game is this when you're actually like in there? Cause this, I mean, it sounds like a cool world, right?
Yeah. Cool world.
I was about to say cool world. And I realized that was a movie.
Yeah. Fortunately, the play backs this up. It is incredibly fun because the idea is that, primarily what you're doing when you're fighting other people is battling against these giant robots called abductors. And basically, since the citizens, the smart people, the elite are the greatest resource, all the Panopticons are constantly trying to steal each other's, you know, elite scientists or, you know, greatest thinkers. So that's kind of, and they send these giant robots to do it. So the giant robot will swoop in, snatch a citizen, and your job is to go out and fight it and reclaim the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And that is incredibly fun and works incredibly well. Oops. It functions almost like a Shadow of the Colossus light.
I mean, it sounds like a Monster Hunter a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it's got that flavor where it does that. It's not quite to the scale of Shadow of the Colossus, but I definitely got flashes of that. Your character is equipped with essentially a grappling hook, where you can like grab onto monsters, jump to them. You can also use it to like fly around the world. But you know,
it's like Lost Planet 3.
Yeah, actually that's probably a great analogy for it.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, you know, leaping onto this monster, grabbing onto a certain part of it. You can choose to try to kind of ride it and cut off pieces. So for example, a monster with a shield on it, a giant robot with a shield on it is impervious to gunfire unless you can cut off the shield. So you have to latch on, cut off the shield, but it can, you know, you have to kind of gauge how long you can stay on it before it swats you. And it really, really takes down your health quickly. You're working in a teams and that feels really good too. So far I've just done AI controlled teams, but I get the feeling the meat of the game is playing with other real live players. I haven't experimented with that yet, but I'm excited about it. Mm-hmm. But kind of working together to take down these giant monsters is really cool. So the feel of the game is great. All the arenas are kind of designed around this dynamic of having, you know, you, the small player character, plus the giant monsters. That is just, it's really fun to play. Like I found myself, you know, I've got my Vita at my bed and I'm supposed to go to sleep, but I'm like, just one more. I want just one more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fantastic. The one problem with the game is that it doubles down on this theme of having to buy all your rights a little too much.
Does it turn into like Final Fantasy Tactics Advance where like it really restricts what you can do in an unfun way?
Yes, because until a certain point in the game, you do not have the right to fast travel.
Oh, shoot. Ooh.
And they make you fucking suffer. Literally, all you're doing is viewing cutscenes. Mm-hmm. One cutscene is on one side of the level, and the other cutscene is on the other side. And yeah. I'll be damned if it doesn't take 15 minutes to run back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah, so that sucks.
Can I interject with something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I was thinking about this past week, is one thing I appreciate about like Knights of the Old Republic is the fact that they make you walk through the areas. Like, you can fast travel between planets, but you still get a lot of like the culture of the area by having to walk back and forth with it. Whereas yeah. like in Fallout 4, you can just fast travel anywhere. So like, you only see a spot once and you never need to see it again. You know,
I wish I could say that were the case, but it is literally a cell block.
Yeah.
Like, and worse, it is multiple rooms of the pretty much exact same cell block repeated over and over that you're walking through. So it is.
Yeah. It might not apply to this game.
Are there even like cool distractions or opportunities to find cool distractions along the way?
No, there's nothing. It is horrible. Like, it fits with the theme, which makes it less bad, but it's still inexcusable.
Yeah.
I pushed through to the point where you are allowed to have fast travel, and that made everything get better. It was like, it feels so good when it stops hurting.
It doesn't sound like the kind of game that would benefit from enforcing that kind of tedium on you.
No, not at all. Especially because the combat is what makes it so much fun.
Yeah.
And all the questing in between and the cutscenes and everything are completely secondary to that. So I wish they had telegraphed you will get fast travel a little earlier. I wish they had given you fast travel off the bat, right? That would have fixed everything.
Or fast travel via bat.
Yes. that would be fantastic. But at least made it really clear, like, there is a fast travel system. Because I played up to the point where I got fast travel thinking this was going to be the game. And I was coming pretty close to being, like, not worth it when I got fast travel. So I'm sure there are people who bounced just before that point, and it's their loss, because it really is a fun game. Yeah. So that's unfortunate. Like I said, there's an in-world reason for it. It fits the theme and the world of the game, but that doesn't make it excusable.
Yeah.
But I've really enjoyed playing it, and I'm looking forward, because I've gotten hints of a lot more depth. So like I said, all the battles except for one so far have been against giant abductor robots. There was one battle that was versus other sinners from another Panopticon, and that was a completely different combat experience, because now all of a sudden it's this kind of almost Call of Duty, you know, third person shooter Gears of War type of game instead of this giant robot Shadow of the Colossus game. And it was, you know, same mechanics, but a completely different flavor. And I have a feeling that will return. And also that there will even be like multiplayer in the game versus other human opponents, which is really exciting to me. So I think there's a ton of depth to this game, Freedom Wars, that I have yet to get to. But I love the world. I fought through the tedious gating and have gotten to a point where I feel like I'm free to do what I want. And I'm excited to kind of exploit that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What's the name of the game one more time?
The name of the game is Freedom Wars, and it's a PlayStation Plus game.
Yeah.
Although I believe that's for December. So if you haven't downloaded it already, sorry. But if you have, let me know, please. Actually, if anyone out there, this is a call. There's a co-op element to this game, and I want to play it with people who aren't just complete randos. So if you got this game through PlayStation Plus, if you feel like trying it out, let me know.
Yeah. Cool. I hope people don't think that I actually believe either that thing I said about women or religion. I saw an opportunity to say teacher, original sin. Cool. So I'm going to come in with mine. Actually, I brought something to the show.
Ooh,
I know, right? So over this past weekend, I played and got two endings in Undertale.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So, this sucks because I'm really late to the party, and a lot of other shows have really talked about the basics of Undertale, including on this network, the comrades over at Check It Out Comrade did a whole episode on it. They were not too keen on it. And this is a game that people have really, really reacted to very strongly in either direction. So it sucks because it's going to sound like I am, you know, either retreading the same ground or responding to what anybody else said about it. And I definitely don't want to do any of that.
I am an Undertale virgin. Okay. I've seen the name in headlines and I've not read a thing about it. So you have a blank canvas to paint on as you will.
Yeah. Ben, have you heard about this game?
Nope.
Yeah. So I'm surprised because it's definitely something that people evangelize for if they like it and are quick to complain about how much it's evangelized if they don't like it. I'll give you the basic rundown. This is it came out in 2015. It is an independent JRPG style game where you're playing as a young child who has fallen into this kingdom of monsters where all the monsters have been sealed away. And it has kind of these twin gimmicks, the first of which is that combat takes place pretty much entirely through these bullet hell kind of segments. So you are, it takes place from kind of like this Dragon Quest kind of perspective where you see the enemies in front of you. You're trying to avoid their projectiles in this box by maneuvering this heart around. And each of these different kinds of enemies has different attacks and different kind of patterns that you have to, avoid, from like joke kind of stuff where there's a depressed ghost who their only attack is to just say, "Don't really feel like it right now. Sorry." Like he just doesn't want to attack, all the way up to stuff that looks like it would be out of something developed by Cave or what have you, right? That's important because that's the way that you avoid damage. And the other gimmick is you have the option to either spare your enemies or kill them dead in their tracks.
Okay. So is this like a Shadows of Mordor kind of thing, or how does that play out?
I wouldn't say it's like Shadows of Mordor because I haven't played Shadows of Mordor. When I say spare, it really just is kind of a more difficult way to kind of neutralize or pacify the individual enemies that kind of manifest by understanding that this particular enemy is a character. This is a monster who has a life and preferences, and you have to check them out and read the text, either what they say or the description of your observations, and then pick like an option that will kind of like say like, "Hey, we're buddies now." So like you'll come across this thing that looks like a turtle that has like a bathtub on its back instead of a shell. Its name is Washua.
Nice.
And you can look at him and determine like, oh, he really likes washing things, but he doesn't understand that washing people hurts you, except when you run into the green projectiles. So you respond by saying like, "Hey, clean me." He's like, "Awesome, great, I love this." And he plays into it and then he shoots these projectiles at you and you run into the green ones and it heals you. And after you've given that chance to be like, "Yo, dog, I know what's up," then you have the ability to spare him without killing him.
And do you have to do this multiple times? Like, are there multiple versions of that enemy?
So he will keep coming back, and that's a complaint about the game, is that this is like a 16-bit RPG. It kind of takes cues out of Earthbound, even though Earthbound had encounters visible on the map, and it has random battles. However, the thing is, once you've encountered an enemy in an area, it's less likely that you're going to encounter them again. I didn't find the random battles to be as offensive as a lot of people did. Although I understand that, you know, like random battles are a player hostile kind of approach. And if you are trying to go like a regular kind of route, either killing them or going completely the other way, the ending that I have not gotten yet, and I don't know if I'm going to get it, is the genocide run. Like the genocide run is you grind for experience like you would in a JRPG until there's nobody left, because either they're all dead or evacuated.
It's got like Dark Souls 2 where like you kill enough of them, they stop coming.
Yes, but this changes the story entirely. Huh. And it turns it into a horror game where you're the slasher.
That's great.
And it goes back and forth between being kind of like, okay, yes, this is a predictable way for this to shake out, and kind of playing with the idea that this is a video game and saying like, oh, you're just doing this because you can. Because it knows that this is my second playthrough, and they know that I was good the first time.
Huh.
And so like,
wait, does it comment on that?
Yes. It knows if you reload on a boss, it knows if you fuck something up and, didn't want to, you know, commit to that. Like it keeps track of all of that.
It's like the Riddler in the Batman games where he's like, you're using a walkthrough, aren't you? If you get too many trophies.
Kind of, maybe, but also it's a little bit more like Revolver Ocelot and Metal Gear Solid when he knows that you're using a turbo controller.
I did not know that.
Yeah, no, like he says, like, and don't think about using a turbo controller because I will totally know, and he totally does. Or like a Psycho Mantis reading your memory card, like it does something with the configuration files and cloud backups to where it is keeping track of all the stuff, and this makes the tone very wildly, very like V-A-R-Y, wildly, you know, between the two of them at its cutest and at its most like positive. If you are putting positive energy into the world, it is very Earthbound like in that there is a bit of a bite to it, but it's mostly a very cheerful game about these weird, quirky characters that you're trying to get close to. And I love that because it's not like a traditional morality kind of thing. It's not, hey, how many people do you kill or not? It's like, are you taking the opportunity to get close to these things, to try and understand them? And it rewards you with that, with like some really good content. like the bosses of each individual area, they're characters in their own right, but you really wouldn't know that until you spare them and then continue interacting with them. And everybody that was initially trying to kill you becomes somebody who's on your side.
It makes me think of the cave story, bad guy. I forget his name now, but he's like the first boss fight, mm-hmm. and he stomps into the arena. And he's like, you want to roll? And you can just like, no. And he'll be like, oh, okay. See ya.
But yeah, it's kind of like Balrog. And I would say cave story is it's a pretty good kind of tonal comparison. I think there's a lot of, comparisons to Earthbound, which is understandable because it's very much cribbing from that. But yeah, Cave Story actually feels like a pretty apt comparison as well, because Cave Story can get fucking dark, and so can this.
Yeah, it really can. But I mean, that just from that comparison, that's high praise, because Cave Story is pretty freaking good.
Yes. I really like this game, like an awful lot. And I'm not going to be one of those people who says, hey, you have to play Undertale. Like, you probably have an opinion about this game if you've been exposed to it either by its fans or, you know, by looking at videos or whatnot. I would encourage you to give it a try, because it's like, especially if you have only heard the worst about it, it's probably not as offensive as you think it's going to be. Like, I went into it having heard all the negative stuff and having heard all the positive stuff and being like, I just want to take this thing on its terms. And it might just be because I'm used to turn-based combat. It might be because I'm used to random battles. It might be because I'm really like predisposed to liking incredibly sweet, quirky stuff. But like, there are awesome characters in this, and I was really kind of into learning their stories and learning more and seeing more of this world. And it helps that it's very short too.
I was going to say, if you got two different endings in the course of the week, between recording, then it can't have been too long.
Yeah. So my first playthrough took about like 8 hours. And then that second ending, you don't actually have to play through the entire game again. You just reload and then you do a couple of different things, and then you're on to the true pacifist path. You have to get the neutral ending first. The genocide run, which is really interesting, and I definitely want to finish it. It's weird because I'm going through it knowing all the characters, and there's like some emotional resistance, like, oh, I know Papyrus is a really cool dude, so I don't want to kill him. And
but you must.
But they do everything like, no, I believe you can be a good person. Like, I know you just like, I know that there's something good in you. I know you're going to spare me. And then you kill him and he turns to dust. This is like one of the first big bosses in the game. It's like the first third of the game. It's like, oh, man, but you're committed and you know the way that this is going to ripple out, and things get darker and the music gets slower and weirder and more off tone. However,
so is it like better to go through the genocide run first? Then,
no, because it's more of a redemption story? The genocide run stains your playthrough, actually. Stains future playthroughs.
Huh.
Yeah, you have to go through a bunch to get like a pure one again. Oh. I don't know how I feel about that, honestly. Genocide is it's so tough. What I was about to get to is like all the bosses are pushovers until you get to one particular one who decides to really put up a fight, and I don't know if I can get past her. Gotcha. Like, it is so hard. Like, I got frustrated with it last night. I got frustrated with it tonight. And it's like, I might have to put this down and just read the ways that this articulates.
So does that mean it's more difficult to finish a boss by killing them than by redeeming them?
So by redeeming them, you're still learning the patterns, and you're still you're definitely still kind of learning how to last in a fight. Like, some fights can really, really last a long time. However, this is a much harder version of a fight that you would have, you know, encountered in the pacifist run. Does more damage, has a higher max HP, and her attacks are much, much faster, it feels like.
Is that because you've killed people leading up to her, or yes. Is that because... Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, like, there's a narrative reason why you're fighting the harder version of this boss. And, like, that sucks, because I definitely want to get past this, but I don't know if I can. Aside, you know, except with practice and whatnot, but, like, I kind of want to use this momentum and, like, move on to the Magic Circle or to Life is Strange or something. Like, I might want to be done with Undertale. But, like, to the point about the game's length, like, that first playthrough is about 8 hours, and then it was about 4 more hours with to get pacifist. And, like, I've put, like, 14 in total right now.
Which for something you're describing as a JRPG.
I know, right? So, like, that's a lot of time in, you know, just in absolute terms. But for a JRPG, like, it's super digestible. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, like, the intro.
Yeah. So I like it. It's really endearing. It's, like... On either a neutral or a pacifist run, it is sweetness the game. I love the characters. Napstablook is one of my he's my dude. He's the depressed ghost that I talked about. Who you meet him? He's lying blocking your way, and the text box just says Z Z Z Z, but it's just him saying Z over and over again. And then you find him at his house, chilling with his spooky music, listening on headphones. Like, yeah, it's great. And like his whole thing is you encourage him, and then he, like, inadvertently saves you throughout the rest of the game. It's super heartwarming. Yeah. Nice. I don't know. I dig it. It's definitely worth checking out, I think. You know, if you haven't already played it, if you're an evangelist, and you know, I would say, especially even if the evangelists have chased you off, I hope that I have presented a reasonable kind of defense of this.
I hope I presented it lukewarmly enough that you're willing to try it.
It's tough because, like, to a certain extent, this feels like a game. It feels like a very shrewd creation. Okay. It's kind of weird because it feels like a very shrewd creation that is meant to create a fan base. It does, if that makes any sense, like, to inspire fan art, to inspire Tumblr, Imgur, or whatever, like, whatever community is your boogeyman to, like, write fan fiction and do fan art and, you know, make ships between the different characters and stuff. Like, it feels like that, but, like, that's an uncharitable read of it, but, like, also, like, it's really endearing. I know I've used that word a lot today, but there's a lot to speak to it that it's just, like, they made something that you want to get attached to, and that needs to be rewarded, especially something that has this, you know, relatively non-standard morality system to it. And no, there are not all kinds of memes in this. They only seem like memes because people have run them into the ground already.
They're only Isn't memes that a because meme? People made the memes.
No, a lot of them are memes because Undertale made them memes. Exactly, Dennis. Yeah. Cool. So I dig it. I like it. Do you guys have any questions about that?
I think I covered it during the conversation.
Ben, how about you?
I don't think so.
Okay. Do you guys want to button it up?
Let's do it.
Okay. That was episode number 133 of The Level. We're going to have to catch David on the flip side when he comes back next week to talk about what he has been playing. But until then, I'd like to thank you so much for sticking around and for listening. We have a bunch of shows on the network that if you're listening to this, we think you would enjoy. The two perennial underdogs are Teenage Dirtbags and Abject Suffering, which I really encourage people to check out.
Ahead of their time, I would say.
you heard my R Zone turn on. Probably one of my favorite episodes of Abject Suffering is coming out later on Monday, I think, as you're listening to this. So go check that out. We're talking about the R Zone portable system. But yeah, we have a whole network of shows. People killed it with the Amazon link. You can go to patreon.com/duckvtv if you would like to. And of course, tell your friends, especially if they like video games. Mm-hmm. Am I missing anything?
Just some sleep, I think.
Yeah, I think so. So yeah, let's let us call it. I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I have been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for the title. All right, so I have three. Does anybody have one they want to throw out?
I have four.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, wow, four.
Whoa.
I know.
Okay.
I tried to be on top of it. So I have Wow Thoughts, which was before the recording. A bunch of uncles. One that I'm sure everyone has, which is Shenmue 3's company.
Yeah.
And then I have Wonderful spelled with a one, which was an unintentional pun that Dennis made, maybe. Maybe unintentional.
What was the context?
You said that you've played one game and it was wonderful.
Mm. Oh no, that was intentional.
Right. Intentional pun.
I love that because it reminds me of that thing you do. The wonders, but they spelled it with the owned eaters. What? Mm-hmm. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, it's Shenmue 3's company.
That's the only one that showed up on all three lists. Yeah. I also have Moisture Farm League and Fast Travel via Bat, but it sounds like Shenmue 3's company is the winner.
Yeah.
Easy one tonight.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
We've been waiting for Shenmue.
Nobody had better get those backer gifts or I'll die. I need to go to bed if that wasn't evidence enough.
Yeah, good stuff.
Cool. Right. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Yeah, have a good night.
Have a good week.
Yes, you too.